Good evening, everyone. I'm Robert Cartwright from the Institute of Classical Osteopathy, and this evening I'm talking to Hendrik Fleck, who's an osteopath in Switzerland, who has been a very, very long-term lecturer at the Institute of Classical Osteopathy, and his speciality is teaching about the lymphatics. And he is going to be running a course in Dublin at the Little John Centre on December the 2nd and 3rd this year, and I was just going to interview him about it, and so he can let us know what he's going to be doing. Hello, Hendrik, how are you?
Hi, Robert. I'm feeling very excited, but very happy as well. Thank you. How about yourself?
Good. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. It's good that we've got a workshop on. It's been you know, a long time through the pandemic that we haven't been able to put stuff on. So now that's over and done with and brushed aside, we can all get back to some kind of semblance of normal and getting back to having meetings and getting together and doing teaching.
It was time, wasn't it?
Yes, definitely, definitely. So what was it that drew you to have a special interest in the lymphatic system?
It was actually quite astonishing and special experience here in my personal clinic here in Switzerland many years ago, because you should know that I'm living in a wonderful area of Switzerland, the south, which is touching to the Italian and French border. And the valley follows the pathway of the Rhone River, which ends up in France, in the south of France. Mm. And the speciality of our area is that it has a lot of sun shining. It's a very dry climate. So there is a wonderful opportunity for a great wine culture, actually. Mm. And of course, the Swiss cheese is also very known. We got wonderful cheeses over here. And of course, the chocolate.
Yes.
So then you have the end of the year, December month, which is the month where all the people are preparing and celebrating Christmas and the end of the year, with a lot of meetings, aperitifs and suppers and dinners, which is a very nice time. But then you will see on January, when spring starts slowly at the end of January, that people are in one way a bit tired, and on the other side also quite overloaded by all these wonderful products we have here in Switzerland. And if our own wine is not enough, then we just have to swap over to Italy or France to get their wines, their cheeses, and so on. So I started actually realizing that in the month of January and February, I was dealing with a lot of problems in the patient's bodies, especially localized on the right side, that went from the right side cranial stuff, headaches and eye problems and tinnitus, towards neck stuff, towards the problems at the CD area, right thorax stuff, breathing stuff, skin stuff, the right hip, even elbow joints, hip joints, knee, until the feet. And then I start realizing actually that it was all connected to an overloaded liver. And the overloaded liver, we understand now because of what, during all these festivities during the last month of our year. And then I saw that the overloaded liver created lymphatic congestion everywhere possible, with an irritation, physical irritation, that means just pressure, because you cannot compress the fluid. The fluid will compress areas, so you've got a physical irritation. And on top of it, you've got a biochemical irritation because the biochemical changes, because of a lack of elimination, will create more acid aspects of the body fluids, and that will also irritate the nerve centers, sensitive nerve centers. So by this congestion of the lymphatics due to a liver charge, we witnessed all kind of physical and some mental problems as well. So, and then I start looking more deeper into the liver function towards the lymphatics function. And then I realized how very important the liver is actually for the lymphatics, which is often right now even very much ignored still. And so then I put two things together, and then working on with classical osteopathy, I witnessed all these wonderful tools we have, thanks to our training, to contact these systems and to treat them. And this I wanted just to, it's so exciting, actually. That's why it's my passion to share it with all my colleagues and new upcoming colleagues, you see.
Thank you. That's fantastic, and it's wonderful that you've developed that interest, and you do share it with us, because I've seen a number of your lectures over the years, and they're always incredibly interesting and full of good, relevant information and clinically useful tips to use at the treatment table, so you can pick stuff up over the weekend and then start using it on the Monday when you start seeing patients again.
Yeah, and the wonderful thing is that, in fact, I get very much feedback from our colleagues who followed some courses with me, that they are indeed applying immediately these principles and techniques. They immediately see the results. So it's very encouraging to talk about it, to show it, and people can already apply it immediately without being a very big specialist in this system, you see.
That's very nice. That's really useful then. So as obviously you're a classical osteopath like myself, and obviously what we do is we study how the pioneers of osteopathy worked with this set of principles to give us a treatment rationale. How does that fit with modern research in the lymphatic system?
Well, let's just give me a second to read you a statement of Still, because we are talking about classical osteopathy, and we are following the principles of our earlier starting osteopaths like Still and Littlejohn. And I give you a text to realize something coming from that time. It goes like this. If we think, Still writing, and say that disease is only too much dirt in the wheels of life, then we see that nature takes this method to wash out the dirt. Let the lymphatics always receive and discharge naturally. If so, we have no substance detained long enough to produce fermentation, fever, sickness, and death. We strike at the source of life and death if we go to the lymphatics. Thus, it behoves us to handle them, the lymphatics, with wisdom and tenderness, for by them and from them, a withered limb or any division of the body receives what we call reconstruction or is built anew. And Rutina Still. We are in 1815 somewhere, aren't we? And then you can add the statements of Littlejohn telling that there are areas in our body where there's no or very poor blood supply, like the antithesis, where the tendons are fixed on the bones, the various structures. There is no blood supply, but there is always lymph supply, and that every body cell is bathed in lymph. So if you recognize that there are spaces where there's no blood supply but lymph supply, yes, then you understand that the lymph is not only responsible for our immune system, it's not only responsible for cleaning functions, washing functions, but it's also responsible for nutritional responses. And then if you realize that the lymph volume represents 3 times the entire blood volume, arterial and venous together, how could we ignore the importance of this system, which is proved in that way anatomically and physiologically? Okay. And then you see that long time, several statements of Little John and others were ignored, like, for example, the importance of the liver by creating the lymph, or the huge importance of the diaphragmatic functions, still ignored if you see modern schemas of the lymphatic system. You see primary and the secondary lymphoid organs, but you will hardly see the liver nor the diaphragm. It's very few that they are represented, actually. Realizing that they recognize that if you have got the main channel, the main finishing collecting channel before the lymph get back into the venous blood supply, blood circulation, sorry, the thoracic duct is a very big pathway of lymph, and 66% of lymph in the thoracic duct comes from the liver. Yes. And if you besides that realize that the diaphragm is a big pathway for the lymphatics, coming from the abdomen, coming from the legs, going upwards right to the vena cava superior via the thoracic duct, it has to go through the diaphragm. That's one thing. But also, the diaphragm on itself is a huge sponge or drainage directly from the peritoneal fluids and the pleural fluids. They are directly passing into the diaphragm. So if the diaphragm is moving, you have this sponge and sucking effect, which will very much affect the lymphatic circulation. And these organs were mentioned by Little John, but so often until yet even ignored. So it's incredible. And it was also ignored, for example, that in the cerebral spinal fluid was connected to the lymphatic fluid, which Little John described already at that time. And it took us until 2016, when first modern research outcomes, so-called evidence-based research, are there. They recognize that there is in the brain, in the central brain, and in the spinal cord, there is lymphatic fluid, which is apparently connected to the cerebral spinal fluid. So that has been recognized right now. Another thing which has been recognized long time, they stated that in the bones there was no lymph.
In the bones.
In the bones. And they recognized later, about 2018 as well, that the bone structure is a living structure, is a vital structure, and is dependent on the action of the periost tissues surrounding it by the action of the interstitial fluid, which is influenced from the periostal tensions, and so on. But the interstitial fluid is exactly the same as the lymphatic fluid.
Mm.
Because the lymphatic fluid is created by filtration coming from the arterioles, going right into the interstitial space.
Mm.
From there, it goes into either the venous vessels, or it passes directly into the first collecting lymphatic channels. And there is no barrier, no filter. So the only difference between interstitial fluid and the lymph is just the anatomical space.
Where it is.
Yes, where it is. So it's fluid. And then following its pathways and going through the nodes with all the filtration activities by phagocytosis, then the lymph will change in color. And we'll get this whitey color. But in the beginning, it's just liquids. So if they recognize that the bone vitality, the bone structure is dependent on the interstitial fluids exchange and dynamics, then you just can say, well, it's also lymph, you see?
Also,
you've got these research teams of Lisa Hodge, for example, a PhD working in the United States. Together, she's a scientist working with PhDs.
Hollis King, I think, was one of them, wasn't he?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're working with the osteopaths together, and they stated very clearly how simple lymphatic pump techniques done by osteopaths will enhance the mobilization of lymphatics, all kinds of lymphatic cells. Lymphocytes and dendrites and macrophages, all kind in the lymphatic fluids. So we have a great role to play in also in infectious pathologies. They did work on the hospitalized people with acute pneumonia, and then they found out that thanks to the lymphatic lymphatic pump techniques, the stay was in a significant way reduced for the patients in the hospital. The onset of coughing was reduced, and the need, very important, the need for antibiotics was in a significant way reduced. So you have a real big role to play in also in a modern society where there is a problem with the upcoming resistance from the bacterials, devices, antibiotics. So you see that from one side, lymphatics are still very often ignored.
Yeah.
And on the other side, you see that there are more and more modern research outcomes confirming the statements of the old osteopaths.
Yeah.
So it's very, very exciting.
That is, isn't it? That is really, really interesting. Of course, Mervyn Waldman, our very own Mervyn Waldman, who works in the hospital in Rambam, he does quite a lot of lymphatic work as well, I believe.
Yes, I went seeing him twice over there, a few days. I stayed with him and following his patients, and in fact, he uses it very much, and also in his book. He wrote, he spends quite some place on the lymphatics also very, very, very well. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Okay. So, have you noticed any link? Obviously, we've the new discovery of the glymphatics and circulating around the brain and the spinal cord, and which was actually mentioned by Little John 100-odd years ago, but obviously he's given no credit for that. But have you noticed any correlation with lymphatic problems and psycho-emotional type problems?
Yes. If we consider that the lymph is everywhere in the body, and also that the lymphatics do have nervous innervation from the sympathetic and the parasympathetic system. And then you see the connection of the brain to the limbic system, which is connected to the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus is for us the chief of the balance between sympathetic and parasympathetic system. And we can, with the by touching our diverse osteopathic centers, we can influence the hypothalamus, can influence the circulation of the lymphatic system in the brain, in the central systems, and we can also influence the lymph in other systems. So there is a connection with lymph via the osteopathic centers with all what's happening in the central brain, and touching the hypothalamus and the limbic system, which is the emotional system, isn't it? So there you might have all the buried stuff stocked over there coming up again, which might be reactivated actually in the central part, so that people start remembering stuff they just buried away to get on in their life. And then at a sudden the body says, well, I will give you some symptoms that there will be somebody who is going to treat these symptoms, so that we can activate, reactivate all buried stuff you thought it was gone, so that it can come out and that we can get released by this. This is happening in the central nervous system. But however, it can also occur in the peripheral systems, like, for example, the lung area, where lymph plays a big role, because the whole circulation of the mucous membranes from lungs dependent on the good lymph circulation, which can be enhanced or can be irritated by actions of the irritation on the osteopathic centers, which we can reach in the dorsal area, for example, until dorsal 5. And there we see that the lungs do stock very often emotions like sadness. From all stuff long time ago, and the patient had to, in that time, to cope with this emotional shock, with that sadness. So what did he do? He just buried it and went on his life to get on. And then he did get on very well until the body says, well, what I stocked for you, giving you the chance to get on, is now becoming a weight for me. And we have to get rid of it. Now it's you are stabilized in your life. Now you can afford yourself to work on it. And then by reactivating the lymph situation in a kind of, in a situation of acute bronchitis, or even COVID lung problems, or just viral other lung problems, by working on it and activating the lymph, you can also activate all buried stuff. Like working on the liver, which is the organ which takes our anger, for example. It's not, of course, 100% fixed, but it's a tendency which is also recognized by modern researchers from different kind of medicine, recognizing that these areas are taking these emotions, like anger on the liver. And as we are enhancing, stimulating the liver for the lymph circulation, working on the liver might release all buried anger, as well as we are working on the diaphragm, which is so important for the liver, for the lymphatic circulation. You've got the solar plexus, just the diaphragm, don't we? And the solar plexus might stock your anxiety. So that you can also let come up again old stuff from emotional processes long, long time ago, which in modern medicine we are treating sternal pain, or we are treating the rib pain on the right side connected to the liver, or we are treating the lungs just by medication, not allowed the body to bring up the old stuff and get released of it. See? So it's very interesting.
Yeah, so it's the cause-ands, isn't it? You know, treating the cause of causes rather than the presenting symptoms.
Exactly.
So do you notice that much in practice? Old emotions coming up when you're working this way?
These days, I must say, since a few years already, because we are still in evolution, aren't we, as practitioners?
Yeah.
So I think my sensibility went deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening in our world is also a stimulation of this, that I'm witnessing every day about 3 or 5 patients where all stuff comes up without me telling the truth, because I don't have the truth. We are just facilitating, as Still said, we are facilitating their physiological and, as Little John stated, psychophysiological process, because they are just a unit.
Yeah. So yeah.
Wonderful thing is that we don't have to be
a psychotherapist or a counselor.
Exactly. And we don't have the truth in our pockets, but we are just releasing their truth coming up thanks to our stimulation or facilitation, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful. Without pretension, psychologists, we can just enhance their release, which is it's marvelous, because it's honest. We are not telling them their psychological story. It comes up from their system. We just have to explain what they feel. So we translate, actually, their processes, which are coming from them, when they see the problems, thanks to body work, they take distance of it from another angle, and they can start relativizing all stuff, which means that the in traumatic events can be changed into an event which gives us a life experience, strengthens us by understanding.
Yeah.
Without that, we have to tell how to do it. They do it by themselves.
Which is brilliant, isn't it? But it is interesting. You're becoming more sensitive as a practitioner as you get older and get deeper into practice. Practice is called practice because we have to practice, I think. And one of the wonderful things about osteopathy, particularly classical osteopathy, is just when you think you kind of starting to know something else opens up and takes you down that kind of avenue and creates a whole new interest, and then you can take that into helping your patients, which is what we're here for. We're here to help suffering, help relieve suffering, aren't we?
Exactly. And if you realize the number of sensitive nerves we have in one hand, which are covering, one hand is just covering all the diagnostic machines in the whole world. But our problem as practitioner is when we start that from the sensitive fingers, the connections to our brain, the connections are there but are not activated. And they can only be activated, as you were saying, by practice, and being connected to the patient.
Then
we'll see that during all our life, there is evolution in our sensitivity, which is wonderful. John Wernham spoke to my mother while I was defending my thesis in that time.
Yeah.
And my mother was listening to other colleague students presenting their thesis, diploma thesis,
Yeah.
Then we had reception with a nice glass of wine. And my mother went to John Wernham and said, "I just must congratulate you, because I just saw wonderful job of your students. So you must also be very happy." And John Wernham said, "Well, I am happy, yes and no." And then she asked, "Why not?" He said, "Well, I'm becoming a slowly old man, and sometimes once the Lord will call me upwards to him, but I have so much more to learn." We never stop learning by practicing and practicing, activating the connection between the peripheral sensitive system and our central understanding brain.
So we've got a few more years of learning yet, haven't we?
That's a wonderful thing. It's just so exciting feeling yourself learning, getting further, and with being able already, even if you don't have all this experience as a beginner, you can do already wonderful things for your patient.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about the workshop that you're going to be running on December the 2nd and 3rd in Dublin at the Little John Centre.
So, first of all, very happy that I can do it in the Little John Centre. Chris Campbell, that's very exciting. It's a big honor for me. And then, yes, I will start on Saturday morning just with first in a review of the anatomical and physiological stuff. Also with applied anatomy and applied physiology. Then we will go over the pathophysiology, of course. We'll show you diverse application forms for diverse pathologies of the several systems in the body, acute and chronic, especially also acute, that is very exciting. Then I will talk about some modern research outcomes, really confirming the old statements of the osteopaths, Still, Little John, Burnham, and others. I will give you also a reading list, what you can find by yourself, and then we will practice. I will show you techniques, and then we will do them together, and we'll just go around and try to help to correct the techniques and to enhance your technical, your practical capacity to deal with this lymphatics in all kinds of different systems.
Fantastic. Well, I'm really looking forward to it, because I'm hopefully going to book a spot on there. So that's something for me to look forward to in December, apart from Christmas. Obviously, we've got that to look forward to as well. So that's fantastic, Hendrik. Thank you very much for your time. I know you've just finished work, and obviously we've got the time difference between here and there. But if anyone would like to book a place on this fascinating course, just go to our website, which is www.classical-osteopathy.org, and you can book through there. Thank you very much for your time, Hendrik, and I will speak to you soon.
Yeah, all pleasure. Looking forward. Thank you very much, Robert, for your engagement. Wonderful engagement as a vice chairman of the wonderful functioning ICO, Institute of Classical Osteopathy. Marvelous. Yeah.